G'day team, welcome to another show. It's your fave, hopefully. Well, who knows? That could be bullshit. Could be your first time and you're going, who's this dickhead and what's it about? And you're tuning out as we speak. Or you could have been here a few times and you're still sussing it out. Or you are hardcore. Either way, welcome to the U Project. Tiffany Cook, welcome to the U Project also.
You're looking vibrant over there, Harps. You are looking vibrant. How are you?
Can you turn your mic up a tiny bit?
Is it low now?
Let's give it a tweak on air while everyone's listening.
How does that sound, sir? Testing two.
Yeah, that's better. Let's live testing. We don't edit anything here. Fuck it. I was listening to Joe Rogan yesterday and he finished up. He'd been talking for 3 hours and 10 minutes or something. And he goes, this is literally how he ended the podcast. He goes, I'm busting for a piss. Let's wrap this bitch up. Right? That was the end. I'm like, this is the top ranking podcaster in the world who gets $100 million for his podcast. And it's, I'm busting for a piss. Let's wrap this bitch up. I'm like, well, and people think I'm unsophisticated. Anyway. How have you been? It's Sunday as we record this. It's Sunday at 3:30-ish. How's your day been?
Well, I've been very well. I mean, I was loving those couple of days of sunshine that we had. I wish they'd come back.
Yeah, what's going on with that? Oh. I put all my comfy kind of, not comfy, but my outdoor furniture with the big cushion outdoor, one chair for me, right? I put a chair out there, but it's kind of big and comfy. And it got fucking annihilated with rain. And now it's like the whole thing is just, so I just got to leave it out there till the sun comes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll probably take 4 weeks to dry. So I apologize. I spoke over the top of you. How has your day been?
No, it's been good. It's been good. Every day the same. Coach went and had her shots today. We got some possibly good news from the vet about her medication moving forward. Recent studies show that they might be halving her medication, which I think is lovely.
Tell people what, well, one, the coach is your whippet. The coach is the love of your life, the apple of your eye, the wind beneath your wings. She is your child. She is your canine child. What is her medical condition?
She has Addison's disease, and that is like the opposite to Cushing's. It's an underactive, like adrenal type of thing. She doesn't produce enough cortisol.
Wow.
So she's on daily pills and monthly injections, and they are not cheap. So cutting those in half is, I was pretty happy with that news. So we're going to test it out next time.
And since she's been medicated and they've identified what her issues are and she's being treated, have you noticed a change in her state and energy and behaviour?
Well, definitely, because when they get Addison's, they have like what's called an Addisonian crisis. And so she went completely lethargic. She would not eat. I had to force feed soft dog food down her neck for a while, and then she had to go in on a drip. Mm. So they get really lethargic and in a really bad way, and that can be fatal. It's very hard to diagnose. Since she's been medicated, she bounced back and she's been awesome, but the medication has done two things. She's a bit mouthy. She's always been a bit mouthy with German Shepherds, but she's a bit more prone to barking at them now. Still runs away if they turn around.
Of course.
A bit like her mum. I think that might not be the medication. That might just be me. And her coat has gone from this beautiful aerodynamic smooth whippet coat to this scruffy looking kind of long, wiry, half fallen out coat.
What's that about?
I don't know. Just kind of weird.
Well, if she wasn't producing enough cortisol, I'm just thinking that's almost similar in a way to an underactive thyroid, kind of, where you're not, kind of related. But it's a wonder she wasn't getting, she didn't get fat, did she? Because she wasn't eating anything.
No, but she definitely has a much bigger appetite now.
Yeah.
She's generally always letting me know that she deserves more food.
Is she stronger and healthier now, or you can't notice a difference?
She's a bit more, she holds a bit more weight.
Yeah.
But she's like, I thought that she, they always said previously, or my previous vet said she should sit about 16 kilos, which is heavy for a whippet anyway. Like she's a big whippet. And now she's 18, but the vet was like, she's in perfect condition. She's great. Oh, he's such a good vet. I go in there and he's just giving her a big cuddle and she's giving him a big cuddle. And he's like, oh, she's such a cuddly whippet. And I was like, yeah, that's because I smother her.
Well, yeah, of course you do. That's all right.
It's nice, though, when a vet, you know, I was like, oh, what a beautiful man.
Dogs are good for your health. Like, we know that. Dogs are literally good for your health, unless, of course, you hate dogs, then they're bad for your health. I always find it, and I mean, I know, of course, everybody's different, and so I theoretically get it. I get it. But personally, just experientially, I go, how can you not love dogs?
Mm.
You know, how can you not love dogs? Like my mum, she doesn't hate them, but my mum doesn't warm to dogs at all, which is so weird because I fucking love dogs. And I had to fight tooth and nail to get my first dog.
Oh, what was your first dog?
Chopper. His name was Chopper. And he was a bitzer. He was a bit of everything. He was a pavement special. And fair to say, mum and dad did fuck all to look after him. So they're like, here's your dog. Feed him. Clean up your shit. Don't fuck it up or we'll get rid of him. I'm like, yep, all right. And, so he was dog number one. But I, and they don't dislike animals, but they just don't, which is really weird because I'm the opposite. I play with and stop at every dog. If there's a dog outside, if I walk to the supermarket, there's 20 dogs tied up, I pat 20 dogs. I talk to 20 dogs. If they look at me, like if they're a bit, you know, some of them are a bit timid and don't come near me, well, I give them some space. But so that's why a 5-minute walk can take an hour.
I was on a video call with a mate this morning and he lives on a bit of acreage and he's got a lot of animals and he's got this piglet. Oh, Craig, it was inside. It plays with the dog. It was jumping on the dog. And then he threw the ball for the dog and the piglet chased the ball and was jumping up on the dog. And now I want a piglet.
You're not getting a piglet. Don't be ridiculous. But I will tell you that pigs are surprisingly intelligent.
They're amazing.
Which, and don't think too much about it because it makes me sad when we open the whole door on don't even start me. But I will say, and we'll finish right now on animals, that there's a golden labby who's a guide dog in training who I started playing with when she was 8 weeks old and now she's about 20 weeks old. But the older that she gets, the more she's wearing her coat, right? And when she's wearing her coat, you can't play with her. So she knows me and I know her. And when I get to, she's at one of the cafes that I get to in the morning and I just want to fucking squeeze her and fucking touch her face and cuddle her and rub her tummy and I can't. And she looks at me like, and I look at her, I'm like, I just want to mess your hair. And we look at each other in this kind of angst moment and her mum kind of looks at me like, don't you? I'm like, well, just a little bit. Although the mum's great, but like it's so hard because they're so smart and they know, like, because I bonded with her a little bit because I saw her every morning because she's at where I get my coffee every morning. And now she's a bit older and she's getting a bit deeper into her training and there's all the rules and fucking rules. I hope she fails. Hope she fails guide dog school. So I just want to play with her. Now, before anyone sends an email, I don't really. I hope she passes and I hope she goes on to serve and do her duty as a guide dog, but I wish I could play with her. I wish I had a Joker card so I could be the exception. Apparently, I can't be. All right. Now, world's longest rambling intro, which has nothing to do with what we're talking about. So, we've done a few recently with me dispensing advice and banging on and answering questions. So if you're a bit sick of the Craig Harper style of workshop podcast, well, this one's probably not for you. So come back tomorrow. There'll be an interview with somebody. But if you like the ones that are kind of semi-lesson, semi-workshop, semi kind of information session, then you might resonate with this. So One of the things we're talking about most of the time in some way, shape or form with this show and with these conversations is how we can create better outcomes in our world. So we're talking about ideas and principles and processes and strategies, and we're talking about, mostly we're talking about what to do right. How do I create better health, build a brand, build a business, become a better communicator, get in shape and stay that way, find my purpose, find my passion, live my truth, all those kind of human things. And we're talking about what are the things that we can do and implement and execute to create better in our world. So what I'm doing today is I'm kind of doing the opposite in a sense. What I'm doing is I'm talking about all the things that I did wrong. So these are a list of the mistakes that I made, and I dare say many of us have made, but we can't change the thing that we're not aware that we're doing, right? So I'm going to tell you, these are things that I, at various stages, I'm talking about from when I started to be interested in learning and evolving and human performance and personal development and getting the most out of my genetics and my ability and my potential and my resources and my time and my businesses and my career and my podcast and my research and my study, getting the most out of all of the things that I do. This is kind of a snapshot of the fuck-ups that I've made and the things that I've perhaps had to, not perhaps, definitely had to address and recognize and take ownership of and acknowledge so that I could, one, change them and, two, do better. So I think you, a lot of you will recognize yourself in a lot of these. This is an amalgamation of a lot of things that I've already shared about, not necessarily specific to me, but every single thing that I'm about to list, I have done and I had to change. And I'll talk about how I changed it as we go. So this could end up being two parts, Tiff, I'm not sure, but you jump in and out whenever. So the first thing, tell me if you hear yourself in any of these, Tiff, I reckon you might. So for me, number one is pointless conversations. And that my pointless, the first kind of ongoing, recognizable, pointless conversation that I had in my life, and I've had many, repetitive, groundhog day, ongoing, same conversation, same person, same topic, same issue, same negative outcome. The first one of those that I had was with my mum. And it went for years. And the pointless conversation was my mum and smoking and me telling her to not smoke. And here's some more research, mum. And guess what happens if you do this, mum? And you know this, mum. And what about that, mum? And so that, all that pointless conversation, and you would think, well, that's never pointless because you're telling her information that could save her life. Well, it depends on whether or not that person wants to hear. And I was giving my mum advice and input and direction that she didn't want. And so it was a pointless, frustrating exercise in exhaustion and disconnection. And I wasted lots of time and energy. And instead of resolving a problem, I created more problems on top of the original problem. So what's my point? My point is, and I've had them the other way, where people would talk to me about, or I would talk to people about stuff, friends of mine that would ask me for advice on their life or their business or their health or their training. And I would spend hours with them, and then they would go away and not act on the advice that they had asked me for. And then sometime down the track, they would come back and ask again, then again, and then again. And sometimes this went on for a decade or more with various friends where they would essentially ask me a version of, and obviously lots of different ones, but this is obviously based on who I am and what I've done and where I've been, a very common one, which is essentially, how do I get in shape? How do I get in shape? How do I change this? How do I do that? And how do I get lean? And how do I fix my back? And, you know, all that stuff. And what I discovered was it really matters that we have conversations with people who are ready to have the conversation. But also, and this goes for me too, it works both ways, people who are prepared to listen and to then do something. And so what we do often, because we love people, is we go and open the door on a conversation with somebody who doesn't want to have it. And it could be with our teenagers. It could be with our partner. It could be with our employees. So one, we either need to stop having that conversation because if it didn't work the first 100 times, it's not gonna. Or two, we need to figure out how to approach that issue in a totally different way. So that's not conversational Groundhog Day. Have you done that, Tiff, with anyone on Planet U?
I dare say I have. I remember, well, it's kind of relevant, when I would come to you for advice, and then I've told you before, I would want to reach out again. I'm like, well, you can't, because you didn't action the last conversation you had.
Yeah.
So you don't have a right to. So figure your shit out and then do something.
Well, I think sometimes people ask for advice, right? And then the advice that they get is not comfortable. And they're like, no, I want the comfortable. Look, what you're saying makes sense, but that's going to be a bit terrifying to implement. So give me advice that I like, right? Mm. And that's part of the conversation as a coach or a teacher or a, you know, to you, I'm a bit of a mentor, even with where we're going, we're friends, but I'm still a mentor in a sense that, like, you and I had a phone call yesterday and yesterday or the day before,
yesterday.
And you did a workshop, which went great. Well done, by the way. And we're talking about that. And then I gave you some feedback. And I said to you, my relationship with you as a coach and a mentor and a friend is, I don't want to spend the next 2 or 3 years dancing around your fragile ego, which you don't have a friend, but I don't want to have to preface everything and warm you up for 15 minutes before I can actually give you the feedback. Are you okay with that? And you're like, yeah. So I would just rather either not have the conversation or go, and knowing that I care about you and my intention is for you to grow and learn and evolve, it's not to hurt your feelings, but you can't tippy toe around everyone's fucking fragility and preciousness and horrible self-esteem on a minute by minute basis, or you'll never get anything said or done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's why there are people that, ask me for advice, and I know they don't really want my advice. They want me to tell them they're doing the right thing. They want me to support whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's, I go, do you really want to know what I think? Because you might not. And I don't like, I care, but I don't care whether or not you do A, B, or C. It's your life, your choices. But if you truly want to know what I think, then batten down the fucking hatches, because it might not be comfortable for you. But I'm just being honest. Like I've said before, you know, if I was only about popularity, then I would only say popular things. And you know how many people think I'm a dickhead or you're aggressive or you're blunt, or I'm like, well, am I, or am I just truthful? And, you know, the thing is, when you have 10,000 people listen a day, which we do, give or take, well, statistically, there are going to be people that strongly resonate with you and people who strongly reject your approach or your thoughts. And I'm cool with both, and I'm cool with everyone in between. So that's just one of the challenges with, you know, with talking and interacting with other humans, is that it's always going to be somewhat precarious. So pointless conversations. My next one is, which I did for a while, a lot of people do, is waiting for the confidence to come. It's like, I need more confidence, or I need to feel more comfortable with this. Or, you know, it's like waiting to get confidence before you do something is a stupid idea, because the confidence comes through doing the thing that you are initially not confident in doing. This is literally how confidence works, is you do something that's a bit hard or a bit confronting or a bit unfamiliar or a bit uncomfortable, or let's be honest, periodically a little bit terrifying. You do that thing, you don't die. You know, there's peaks and troughs, there's fuck ups and failures, but there's also growth and learning. And it's in the messiness of the doing the thing that you're not confident in but want to do. It's in the messiness and the perseverance of all of that that you build confidence and you build skill and you build awareness and you build understanding and you build resilience. This is literally how it works. So don't wait for the confidence to kick in. As long, and also I'm not saying jump into something recklessly. I'm saying if you know that it's what you should be doing and you want to do it and it's really part of your goals moving forward, but you're scared, then that's okay. We're all scared at the start. Number three on things that I've, and I did that at the start. I used to kind of try to wait for this right, you know, vibe or time, or it didn't work. In the end, I just went, well, I know I need to be doing it and I don't have the confidence or the skill, but you know, we start as a white belt. That's how we, you know, we become a black belt, is we start off being shit at things. So number three for me was self-loathing. And there's still a bit of this in me. So I try to make sure that I'm not just beating myself up because I've got shit self-esteem, which is often the case, but less and less these days. So I try to be as self-aware, not self-loathing, as self-aware as possible. So what that means is being able to recognize flaws and faults and shortcomings and challenges without immersing myself in the negative emotion of self-loathing. So me calling myself a dickhead and I'm not good enough and I'm not this enough and no one will like me, I'm going to fuck it up and that's also intersecting with self-pity. And it doesn't, you know, okay, so you're not good at something, suck it up, princess, fucking welcome to life. Like, we're all that. So self-awareness, good. Self-loathing, not so good. Tiff.
I want to know how often overall you feel that when you present, because we had a big conversation on it after I did my workshop. Mm. How often do you feel that when you talk, give big talks, do workshops, you do them all the time, you know you're great at them, you come across amazing. How does that pendulum swing for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's not a whole lot of self-loathing that goes on, but I am quite critical of me in that sometimes. Like I asked you the other day, I said, give me a score, even though this is a subjective analysis. I go, so out of 10, how do you think you went? And you kind of gave me a 6, right? And then, but you qualified things and said, not, you know, and we went back and forth, right? Mm-hmm. So I often, to an audience where I might get overwhelmingly or I might get a lot of really nice positive feedback and I'm on a level, I'm aware that I did a pretty good job and I'm aware that it resonated or it landed with the group, the audience. But I also have a feeling that I was a 7 and they think I was a 9.5, right? I think being, this is quite controversial, right? But for me anyway, for me, I think being a little bit insecure and having a bit of self-doubt and not thinking I'm awesome, for me, it's good for me because it keeps me hungry and it keeps me from getting ahead of myself, you know. But I tell you what I have realized lately, like the other day you and I did an interview with Elizabeth Lesser, who is a spiritual guru. She'll be up, well, by the time this goes up, she'll already be up, I would say, dare say, maybe yesterday's show. Not sure when this will roll out. But what was interesting for me was I watched, you know, one thing that I should do and shouldn't do is when I'm researching people, you know, I go down a bit of a rabbit hole and depending on who it is, I could spend anything from 5 minutes to 5 hours researching that person. And if I open the door and I find them fascinating, I'll just keep watching stuff because I'm fascinated, not because I'm researching anymore. So I watched a whole bunch of her stuff and she's on, you know, and some people would be impressed and some wouldn't by this, but I was intrigued, like here she is, She's on Oprah. She's talking with her, and she's been on multiple times. Arguably the most recognizable person in the world at one stage of her life, Oprah, the Dalai Lama, Deepak Chopra, Ram Dass, who was an amazing spiritual teacher, Eckhart Tolle, all of these very well-known, what we might call gurus or spiritual teachers, very high profile, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so I go into conversations like that quite often on one level, knowing, all right, well, I know that I can interview this lady, chat with this lady, because I've done it, you know, even just on this podcast, which is one of four that I've started, but we've done it 550 plus times. But at the same time, feeling a bit insecure and a bit ill-equipped and a bit out of my depth, because I'm talking to this person that I, in my mind anyway, have got on a pedestal, right? And then we have the conversation, and I kind of surprise myself sometimes. I go, oh, I said something, and Elizabeth Lesser said, oh, I love how you put that. I love, that's exactly how, yeah, you explain that really well. And I'm like, am I really me? You know, so there's that. And then I get off and I go, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I'm not a moron after all. Maybe, you know, and it's, but what was beautiful about what she said, and I've mentioned this another time, but, you know, we were talking about these people that we probably shouldn't put on a pedestal. And I say me, but, and others, but where she goes, yeah, like, I'm like, what's Oprah like? What's Eckhart Tolle? What are all these people like? You know, I hate to be cliche, but tell me, what are they like? And she's like, well, they're like you. You know, they lose their car keys. They go to the bathroom. They lose their shit. They, you know, it's not, they're just humans who are doing, they're on their own journey, and they happen to be more well-known than the average person. But ultimately, they get up in the morning and have a poo, and they have good and bad days, and they fuck up, and they're emotional, and they react well, and they react poorly. And you kind of go, yeah. But we have in our head this story about all these incredible people, but they're just people, you know. So for me, that helps with the whole kind of recognizing that I'm okay. And yeah, I've got flaws and faults and issues, but, and not only that, what made me feel great was, so the world-renowned Elizabeth Lesser, who's had books translated into more than 20 languages and sold millions of books and started the Omega Center in New York City and is world-renowned, done all this awesome shit. She sent me an email. Did you get that email, or did it just come to me?
Yeah, I did.
And she went, oh, sorry, I had to get off the podcast quick. Grandkids were, if the shit was going off. And by the way, this after an hour conversation, and she was awesome. And she wrote to personally apologize. I'm like, well, for God's sake, you don't need to. So I wrote her a thing back going, well, now I really love you. You're amazing. You don't need to apologize. And if you do come to Australia, which she said she wanted to, I said, if you do, you and your husband do come to Australia, hit me up. I'd love to show you around, right? The end. Then I get another email back from Elizabeth Lesser going, oh, we were talking about reality. Here's a video that you might be interested in watching. So now I've got this thing going back and forwards, and I'm going, this is ridiculous, you know, but it's, anyway, it's it's nice. It's nice. All right. So I'm going slow. So the next one on my list is overthinking. I won't go on too much about it because I've spoken too much already, but I used to overthink a lot of things. The reason I overthought was a multitude of reasons, really, but ultimately all comes down to fear. What am I overthinking this for? Because I think I could be, everyone might find out I'm actually a fraud, or I'm full of shit, or I could fail, or I could get embarrassed, or I could lose followers, or fill in the blank. My business could go broke. I'll lose friends, whatever. So overthinking is generally a byproduct of fear, but also fear is a part of the human experience that's never going away. So the challenge was not so much to stop overthinking. The challenge was to get more comfortable in the middle of being fearful. And ironically, once we kind of embrace the fear, the volume goes down on it, which means the fear decreases anyway. So for me, addressing overthinking is analogous to or the same as addressing my fears. So overthinking, if you're an overthinker, think about what it is that you obsess about or go over in your mind too many times or come back to cognitively, or what is the source? What is the source of your overthinking and the source of your behavioral stagnation? In other words, why you're not doing the shit you do should, and also the source of your anxiety, because that will generally be fear of something. Address the fear and that will fix the other stuff, because the other stuff is really just the symptoms of the issue. Overthinking's not the issue, it's the symptom. The fear is the issue. Address the fear and that cognitive mayhem will disappear. The next one for me was a lesson learned early, but I think I'm going to share it because it's a lesson that some people still need to pay attention to. And that lesson for me was, or that mistake for me was ignoring my body. And so, you know, I've spoken too many times about biofeedback, but I, you know, in my teens, I kind of got my shit together. Then I lost my way a little bit in my 20s again, and I put on weight and my body was telling me all kinds of shit, but I was so focused and busy and in my head and in my business and in my brand development and in my, you know, being important as a leader and a boss. And probably for 2 or 3 years, my body was screaming at me to change my operating system, but I continued to ignore it. So I think this is an issue for a lot of people, and whether or not it's with food or it's with sleep or it's with booze or drugs or movement or training or pain or health issues specifically, ignoring your body and not doing something other than shoving pills in, like shoving pills in to take away pain, there's a time and place for that, of course, but let's try to figure out how to resolve the problem that is causing the pain rather than spending the next 10 years creating some kind of addiction to painkillers. Did you want to say something?
No.
All good. My next one is, which we see a lot of now, and I did this early days because I was used to having leaders and bosses around me when I was young that I always needed to get direction from or approval from or acceptance from or accolades from for, should I be doing this? Am I doing this the right way? And then when I started to step out of working for others to working for myself, where all of a sudden there's no director, there's no leader, there's no blueprint, there's no three-step plan, you're doing everything yourself, it took me a long time to not seek accolades, to not need the approval and acceptance. And so, and I see this now with a lot of people doing things which should be, I think we would agree, maybe I'm wrong, but I think most people would agree that, you know, looking after your body, you should just do that. You don't need a fucking RIP participation trophy or a ribbon or an accolade. You don't need a million people on social media to tell you you're amazing because you ate a fucking chicken salad. So, you know, for me, that is a problem. And the reason it's, and by the way, if somebody gives you a round of applause or a pat on the back, that's great. I'm not being a prick. That's great. But when we can't live without that pat on the back or that endorsement, when we're a grown-ass human being who is fully in control of our own choices, then we've got a problem. Now we've developed a new addiction, and my new addiction is now not just food and not just whatever, but my addiction now is if I don't have people telling me I'm amazing all the time, I'm not going to fucking do it. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a problem, and this is some people right now where, you know, if they're not getting public recognition from one person or more, or acceptance or approval or love or accolades for doing what just should be a normal part of their life, based on what they say matters to them, being healthy, you know, having a job that I enjoy, being a good human, serving other people, all that stuff. So we don't need that. I didn't need it, but I looked for it for a long time. So seeking accolades, if that resonates with you, and again, all of this stuff is, you know, this is just about recognizing what we're like. And I know sometimes it sounds like self-loathing, but it's not. But, you know, when we talk about personal development, that is person, the development of the person, you, me, Tiff, right? How do I develop myself to be better? Well, firstly, I have to acknowledge what I am not doing well. I have to acknowledge what I do that keeps me in a holding pattern. I have to acknowledge what is unhealthy for my mind, emotions, body. I have to acknowledge the behaviors that are keeping me trapped in a holding pattern. I have to acknowledge the things that I procrastinate over, the things that I avoid, the things that cause me frustration. So it is about awareness and self-awareness and honesty and humility. So when we, you know, we want to be better, but we don't want to acknowledge the stuff that we're doing right now, which is self-destructive, which is literally a form of self-sabotage. How many people do we know? I've been one of those people, so I put up my hand, who simultaneously want to be healthier, but on the same day do shit to their body that is unhealthy. Like we, on the same day, like I'm, Craig, is one of your goals to be healthier and leaner and you know, lower your blood pressure and you know, all just all those KPIs of health and wellness and performance. Yes, that really matters to me. And by the way, now I'm eating KFC and I'm eating fucking whatever, chips and gravy and a chocolate milkshake. And there were times when I was doing that. I was simultaneously, in the same day, I was talking about how I wanted to be better while doing things that actually made me worse. And that's just recognition, awareness, honesty. The next one, my next mistake is procrastination. What's going on over there with you and your dog?
She's moping around. You know, it's once it kind of gets to 4 or 5 o'clock, she starts knowing it's nearly dinner time.
Right.
She's digging around.
Is she? All right, my next one is procrastination, which is, again, look, timing is an issue, but more often than not, in my experience and observation, procrastination is more of a barrier than finding the right time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can always rationalize, justify, and explain and wait why today's not good and tomorrow's not good. And we go, oh, well, you know, because I've got this on and that on and you know, my back's a bit this and we're in lockdown and it's winter and all. And look, sometimes those things are legit sometimes. And when they are, cool, thumbs up, understand. However, comma, we all know when we are bullshitting ourselves. And you know, the thing is that success and change and growth is inconvenient. It is inconvenient. It's slow sometimes. It's painful sometimes. It's uncertain. It's all of those things that we speak about a lot. And so therefore we're some things always putting it on hold. And I still do this. Like, I can do stuff that other people would find really difficult. I can do it quite easily because I'm really into it, right? Mm. But then there are other things that some people find really easy that I don't. And I'm constantly like, with my research, there's components that I'm good at and I'm all over it. And then there's other stuff like the data, the analytics, the fucking all that shit, right? I will find 72 reasons why I'm not doing that until 7 o'clock tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I will put it off from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. and I know I'm bullshitting myself because when I'm in the middle of it, it just sucks. Whereas if I was not such a moron, I would do it at 7 a.m. Mm. But I still do it. I mean, because I'm human. My next one is obsessing about things that we can't change wasting time, energy, and potential on, you know, stuff that ultimately we can't control or even influence. And just recognizing that our energy and our attention, our physical, mental, emotional energy is not an infinite resource. So based on what I want to do, be, create, change, and influence, I'll say it slower, based on what I want to do, be, create, change, and influence, what's the best use of my energy? Where is my attention today? Where is my focus in this moment? Where is my energy in this moment? Mm. Is it arguing with this person that I will never meet online about COVID? Is it getting offended by the one person in 100 that left a slightly negative comment and then going down a rabbit hole and going, who the fuck is that bloke? I'm going to click on his name. I'm going to see his page. What does he do? Where does he work? And you think, I've never done that? Of course I've done it, because I'm a fucking idiot, right? And then I spend 20 minutes trying to figure out who this guy is that disagrees with me. It doesn't fix anything or change anything. It doesn't change him. It doesn't change his opinion. I don't do it much anymore, thankfully, but I've done it many times. All I do is I get myself into a state because I'm insecure and I want everyone to love me. What a fucking ridiculous, needy goal, right? It just, like, the world is just not that. The world is just not that. And if you need universal approval, then get the fuck off Facebook, every social media platform, and have as few friends as possible, because that is never going to be part of your existence. My next one is part-time behaviors. So doing shit on and off, starting, stopping. And we see this with so many, especially online, so many things, and I won't bang on about all the 8, 10, 12-week programs that people do for a period of time and then they stop and then they revert to their previous behaviors and operating system, and then the results revert to whatever it was before they undertook that. And again, I'm not diametrically opposed to 8, 10-week, 12-week programs, as long as they are the starting point and not the start and the finish. So, you know, the thing is that we find it very easy to say, I'm going to do this program, or I'm going to do this diet, or I'm going to train for a marathon, or I'm going to do the Maxes and Maxines, this or that. And none of those things are bad, but, and I won't hone in on this too much because I've spoken about it a bit, but I find it fascinating when people lose weight or they get fitter or healthier, or their body changes for the better doing a certain protocol for 84 days, and they're consciously changing their behavior and their operating system and their food and their sleep and the way that they stimulate, train, exercise their body, but all the while, so that's the conscious, but all the while subconsciously counting down the days till they can stop. And I'm like, well, come on, you know. And the thing is that we love the idea of short-term things because it gives us a get out of jail card, because it means I can stop. It means there's a safety net. It means there's, you know, there's an escape clause that I can just, you know, tap into. But the truth is, when we say to people, when you say to people, when I say to people, do you want to be in shape, you know, till November, or do you want to be in shape kind of forever as well as you can with your genetics at your age? Like, do you want for as long as is humanly possible, do you want to be in great shape? Well, everybody says yes. So permanent, yes. So, like, do you want to get in shape and then get out of shape? Well, nobody wants that, but everybody does that. Like, who wants to get in good shape and then out? No one. Who wants to lose body fat and then regain it? No one. Who wants to undertake a new kind of operating system that works really well and is producing results and then throw it in? Well, nobody, but kind of everybody. Like, it's and this is the thing, is that the idea of committing to forever. Now, I'm not saying we can't flex it or modify it as we go. I'm not saying you got to have fucking oats and you know, sawdust for breakfast every morning for the next 40 years. But why wouldn't we try to create an operating system that, for the most part, for us each individually, like for me, not drinking booze works. So I'm never going to drink booze. I don't think it's bad. I don't think anyone else should do what I do necessarily. It doesn't work. I know that when I allow some shit into my diet, some junk food, for me, it doesn't work because I mentally and emotionally fuck up. So, and not that anyone else should do that, but necessarily, perhaps you should, it's up to you. But for me, I know that food, that staying in shape, my biggest challenge is around food. And so I'm very practical and realistic about that. Mm-hmm. So I go, all right, what is going to, and I pretty much started this at 40-ish, 30, late 30s and haven't stopped where I went, all right, how do I get to 50, 60, 70 and be in as good a shape or as close as I can to what I am now? And I was in good shape then, where you go, all right, well, I know what doesn't work for me. What doesn't work for me is eating and drinking and living like most people because I don't have their genetics. What doesn't work for me emotionally and psychologically is just having a couple of bits of cheesecake every now and then. Doesn't work for me. Doesn't. And I'm not saying people shouldn't eat cheesecake. I'm saying I shouldn't. And that's, and some people would go, oh, wow, that's a problem that you can't, I get it, but that's just your perspective. Mm-hmm. I respect your perspective, but you are not me. And you looking through your window and judging my behavior, it doesn't work. It works for you, but it doesn't work for me because I know that despite the fact that I'm educated and with most things very disciplined and all that stuff, there are certain things that just don't work that way for me. Just like we wouldn't say to an alcoholic, just have one beer. Oh, don't be ridiculous. One beer doesn't hurt you. Of course it doesn't. Like one beer physiologically, not an issue. Psychologically, emotionally, it opens a multitude of doors that need to remain shut. So, you know, this is the thing. So part-time behaviors, figure out for you, what are the things that I want to change permanently? Now, mate, if I said to you, do you want, and by the way, I'm not saying you should never eat junk at all. I think most people can have some, or what we would call junk food or treat food or whatever, right? I don't think most people should do what I do because I don't think it's necessary. I know for me that if I train every day, and most of my training right now is walking, like I'm walking about 10Ks a day, which I've never really done in my life, not that much, but it's really helping my sanity and my focus and my emotional health right now because I'm not seeing anyone. I'm not hanging out with anyone. I'm not training with anyone. I have no gym to go to. And you can only do so many fucking squats, push-ups and chin-ups in the Zen Den, right?
Pops, I'm running Zoom sessions and I'm waiting for you to show up.
Fuck your Zoom sessions. All right. So Zoom.
What an Zoom. Asshole.
Are you? I'm only kidding. All right. Well, maybe I'll come to it. No, I won't. I'm not going to commit because then you'll bloody
hound you.
Then you'll hold me accountable.
I'll be in your bamboo.
No, no. All right. Let's do a couple more. What are we up to in terms of time?
It's 4:15 now.
Mm.
So we're about, it'll be about an hour.
About an hour. All right. Okay. Next one, comparison. So comparison can be good and bad. Comparison to others, not good. Why? Because you're not them, they're not you. Can you learn from others? That's a good idea. Comparing yourself, no, because you don't have what they have and they don't have what you have and you're not them and you don't have their body or genetics or cognitive or emotional abilities, not better or worse, just different, right? So learning from others, learning from people who have done great stuff, awesome. Comparing you with you, also good. So comparing me where I'm at now with where I was at behaviorally, productively, efficiently, where I was at 3, 6, 12 months ago, what was I doing? So I'm always comparing, not always, that's a lie. I am regularly comparing the quality of the You Project now, 550 episodes in, with the quality in the first 100 episodes. And I'm pretty comfortable that it's better. I would hope when we get to 700 or 800 episodes that it's better again, better interviews, better to listen to, better guests, although our guests are great and a better experience for our audience. That's my goal. So I'm comparing my stuff with my stuff, bringing you into the TYP family. So it wasn't just me. Yes, arm goes in the air. So it's not just me and Melissa trying to run the show. Now we've got three people who have all got skills and knowledge and energy to bring to something, makes it better, right? Mm. So the comparison, you know, they say comparison's the thief of joy. Comparison's the thief of joy when you're comparing yourself, or it can be when you're comparing yourself to somebody that isn't you. So learn from others, pay attention to others if you think they're worth paying attention to. You don't need to reinvent the wheel, but also don't assume that what worked for somebody in terms of building a brand or business or a better body or whatever it is will necessarily work for you. But there's definitely been people on my journey that I've learned from their mistakes, and I would be a fool not to. All right, let's do a couple more. My next one is busyness. I used to be a big proponent of the busyness badge. I was very proud of how busy I was. And I never, you know, but I wasn't always productive or effective. So lots of busyness. So this comes down to recognizing time and energy and investment and resources and what will produce the best outcome. So what's the least I can do to produce the best outcome? What's the least time and the least effort and the least resources? Now, that's not cutting a corner. That's about efficiency. That's about efficiency. How do I do this thing optimally and what's required? Now, I'm not spending 5 hours on something if I can do it in 2 hours. I'm not talking about taking a shortcut or compromising. I'm just talking about, you know, what's the best use of my time? So the best use of my time is not for me to go out and spend 5 hours in the garden, unless I want to do that purely for therapy. But in terms of efficiency and effectiveness, I'm much better off to get my garden guy who's got skills and knowledge and ability I don't for 2 hours, not the 5 hours that it would take me. He will do in 2 hours what I can't do in five. It'll look better. I'll pay him a few dollars and I'll use those 5 hours more wisely, right? So busyness. Perhaps let's get rid of the busyness and think more about efficiency and productivity and managing our energy and having some, you know, we interviewed Mark Randolph, who co-founded Netflix, who was for a period of time the busiest bloke ever. And now is still relatively young, about my age, maybe a year or two older. And I know some people are falling about laughing now because I'm talking about, but I mean, it's not like he's 80 years old or 70 years old. That's what I'm saying. Still young, still switched on, and works 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. Does not work 5 days a week, and that's his operating system. So 5 days a week, he's doing recreational stuff. He's not answering emails. He's not doing any business. He's hanging out with his family. He's learning stuff. He's socializing. He's chilling out because he's figured out how to be productive and effective and how to create a life that really is reflective of his values and his purpose. And I think that's a really good thing to do as well. Mm. All right, let me do a couple more, then we'll pull the pin. So this one, holding on to historical beliefs because they're comfortable and familiar. That's been something that's been an ongoing challenge for me. And I guess this, so I'll say it again, holding on to historical beliefs. So in other words, things that I have believed for a long time because I've believed them for a long time, right? And because I've believed this for a long time, I've got a lot of investment in this belief. And so when someone comes to me with evidence or seemingly evidence that might refute my belief or make it null and void, I definitely don't want to talk to that person. So rather than opening the door and saying, hey, maybe I was wrong, maybe there's a better way, or maybe I completely fuck something up, and going, hey, tell me, I won't pay attention. And so for me, that that challenging my pre-existing beliefs and that need to be right, that's been liberating. And being comfortable with the idea of I don't know, even the things I think I know, a lot of them are probably wrong, completely wrong or partially wrong. And an example I've given too much on this show is the food pyramid that I grew up from when I was 18 and I started working in gyms till probably nearly 20 years till when I was maybe 38. That was pretty much the paradigm that we were all immersed in the fitness industry, when not that we were dietitians, but obviously talk to people about food. And that would generally be the reference point, is the good old food pyramid, which was in inverted commas, the best available science, which we all found out down the track was kind of not great science at all and kind of dog shit. But so I literally needed to get to a point in time where that belief, that historical belief that not only did I have kind of hardwired into my brain, but I'd also been teaching it, like proactively teaching it to thousands of humans. And I needed to get to a point where I went, hey, everyone, bring it in. Yeah, lean in a little bit. Look, it's harps. Lean in. Are you ready? I was wrong. I was wrong. And you've got to be okay with going, I fucked up. I didn't mean to fuck up. I didn't know I was fucking up, but I was wrong. Because if you can't be wrong, you are unteachable. Mm. You are unteachable. And if you think you know everything, you scare the shit out of me, right? So it's going, look, there's stuff that I absolutely know because I've done it, seen it, experienced it, but maybe that's just my truth. There are things I think I know. There are things I've got ideas on, but I'm 50-50. I could be swayed. I'm unsure. And then there's the stuff that I'm well aware that I have no clue about. But I think a really nice perspective to have is to hold out beliefs lightly. And that doesn't mean that we're not committed or, you know, but you think about the amount of hate and bitterness and disconnection and, you know, even right now with all the shit that's going on in the world online, the stuff that where people who have different opinions or ideas or beliefs, and let's just be honest, when it comes to a lot of the stuff that people are arguing about, we don't know. We think we know. Oh, no, I've got science, have you? Because here's some science that contradicts your science. And it's science. Oh, yeah, but my science is the right science. Fuck off, right? And this is, and I'm literally a scientist and I'm literally a researcher. And I'm so aware that we just get ourselves into states that are destructive and unhealthy because we don't like to be vulnerable and we don't like to go, look, honestly, I don't know. I think I have definite ideas and thoughts and beliefs, but do I unequivocally and 100% know? I don't. And it takes courage and it takes vulnerability and it takes humility to go, I don't know, you know. And one of the things that's happening a bit is almost every day someone sends me something about COVID. Someone sends me something about the vaccine. Someone sends me something that they want me to share with my platform. And I'm not doing it. And the reason I'm not doing it is because, one, it's not a good use of my time or energy. Two, I can read something today and then read something tomorrow which contradicts what I read yesterday, and both of them come from, in inverted commas, good sources. Mm. Oh, this is from the such and such institute. Oh, this is from the university of whatever. Oh, this is from, and every single thing that comes across my desk is allegedly the ultimate in science and research. And then everybody gets what people do. People don't understand how dodgy science is. Look, some science is great, but you got to remember that that not everything that gets wheeled out as science is infallible. You know, there was for a very long time, scientists believed that the world was flat for a really long time, because that's how it appeared to us standing on the earth. You know, for a very long time, astronomers thought that the earth was fixed and everything revolved around it. Also not true. For a very long time, researchers said that a human being couldn't run a mile under 4 minutes, physiologically impossible. Mm. They also said that a man couldn't lift 500 pounds above his head in a clean and jerk. Also not true. You know, I mean, we've just... We since science began, we've been proving and disproving things that people thought was absolute gospel, right? Absolutely infallible. And even speaking of infallibility, and I opened this door with some trepidation, but even with religion, pretty much every mainstream religion thinks that they're the one true religion. Well, what you're saying by saying we are the one true religion is you're saying everyone who doesn't agree with us or believe like us is wrong, right? Now, nobody's going, oh, maybe that's, I don't know. Maybe it's like, oh, I don't know, maybe. Well, have you got any evidence? No, we don't have any evidence. Okay, so how do you know? Oh, well, because we know. Yeah, all right, but like any proof of any of this? Nah, well, you know, and this is the thing, and I'm not saying any religion's good or bad, right or wrong. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about humility and honesty and awareness. And when your entire sense of confidence and self-esteem or whatever is coming from a particular belief system or a belief, then you definitely don't want anyone to prove you wrong, right? And I grew up in the middle of really strong belief systems where you are definitely not encouraged to think for yourself. Definitely do not disagree with us. Definitely do not question anything. And not only that, that if you do question anything, there's fucking dire consequences, you know. So hold on to those beliefs lightly. Think for yourself. Seek your own truth. Seek your own purpose. Listen to other people. Learn from people that you respect, but also pay attention to that internal sat nav, that wisdom that comes from somewhere that I can't explain.
I've got a question. I had this question before you went on that big tangent, but that was good. And it's not about religion. It's about, I want to know how your personal view or experience with spirituality has evolved since you've been diving deep in your research.
Mm.
Because your research is around a kind of a similar-ish area when we talk about self-awareness and experience and I feel like it's got a bit of a relationship with it.
I think in general I'm just more open-minded than ever. Like, you know, spirituality is such a slippery thing, slippery idea, slippery construct. And look, what I know is, all I know is what is true for me. And what is true for me is I am a better person when I'm trying to be loving. And I don't always do it well. I'm a better person when I'm not selfish. I'm a better person when I'm authentic, you know. So, you know, for me, a big part of the challenge has been recognizing the dogma of religion that I was raised in. And I'm not saying religion's bad, by the way. I'm saying choose your own path. And if that's religious or not, if that's atheist or not, if that's spiritual and not religious or religious and spiritual or whatever it is, like that's your path. And I'm not to judge that. But I think, you know, the older I get, the more that I realize how much of what I thought and what I even preached in a way or advocated was really just a byproduct of my programming, not any unique personal revelation. So now I try to, and I said to you, we were talking about you and your stuff, and I said, you know, with you running your workshops and you doing the stuff that you'll do, opening new doors and working with audiences yourself, which is great. You know, what matters is that anyone who has an audience, I believe that you have an audience of people who perhaps want to listen to you or learn from you, is that you are not just wheeling out, in inverted commas, stuff that you heard somewhere else. Because for me, it's the antithesis of being a good teacher. So it's, yeah, we're going to be influenced by lots of people, of course, but it's to go deep and to figure out and develop our own philosophy based on what we have learned. And so when I share my thoughts and ideas, I'm just sharing from my own journey. I'm not telling people what they should do. And I don't know, I maybe shared 15 ideas in this podcast, and it's fair to say that maybe two of them will resonate with some of our listeners and maybe 14 with others, or perhaps even none, and that's okay. I don't want people to be like Craig or Tiff. I don't want people to follow a particular path. I don't want people to be a carnivore or a vegan or a Catholic or an atheist or a spiritualist or a Labor voter or a Liberal voter. I want people to think for themselves and learn for themselves. You know, I hope that's what I do, is I hope that I encourage people to be critical thinkers for themselves. Think critically about how you live your life. Think critically. Critically is not in a negative way. It just means thinking clearly. Think critically about how you manage your body. Think critically about what you put in your gob. Think critically about whether or not what you say aligns with how you live. Think critically about, is what you do in front of others reflective of how you actually live when no one's looking, or are you full of shit? Like, it's true. And if that offends you, well, it offends you. But I've been full of shit, so I put up my hand, you know? And this is the thing. We don't need perfect fucking role models. We don't need perfect people sharing perfect messages. We need reality. We need authenticity. We need truth. Because, and I'm not saying I am the truth. I am saying we need to hear messages which are relatable and real and authentic and are actually helpful and valuable. And there's a lot of shit right now that is just fucking self-help, fairy floss bullshit that really is disingenuous crap that doesn't help anybody. Mm-hmm. And there are no strategies. It's, you know, it's like, yeah, you're amazing. Give yourself a self-care day. All right. Then what? But my life's still shit. I had a self-care day. But now I'm still an overthinker. I'm still lonely. I'm still disconnected. I'm still eating shit. Like, we're not solving problems. Let's help people solve problems. Let's get to the core. Let's talk about the fundamentals. You know, we don't need this. Yeah, it's all good. Have a self-care day, of course. Give yourself some love. Give yourself a break. I'm not saying beat yourself up. I'm also saying do the fucking work that helps you become the powerhouse that you need to become to be successful. Because you ain't going to be successful by avoiding things forever and taking the comfortable option and for being the instant gratification person. And that is so many people. And it just doesn't work. And then we wake up and we're 50 and we're still going around in circles and still fucking wasting our time and talent and going, oh, this wasn't my plan. I feel like I got on my soapbox.
I love it when you get on your soapbox. This was my plan, Harps. This was my plan. Look at me.
Yeah, look at you. You fucking started in the bamboo and now you're my colleague. I don't know how that happened.
I declared it in 2017 under my breath one day.
You spoke it into truth. You're like Jesus. You spoke it and it was. All right, everyone. I feel like there was a lot of waffle in that. I apologize. I hope you got something out of it. And yeah, we'll see you next time. Thanks, Tiff.
Thanks, Harps.